Hey guys, I'm Paul Bates, and this is the Fermentation Podcast. Join me on this journey to put fermentation into practice, create culture, and revive this lost art that connects all of us to our cultures of the past. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd, 2014, and this is episode number 3. So today I'm reviewing one of the books that probably most people consider a classic when it comes to nourishing recipes, nourishing ferments, and a homesteader's type of a cookbook. And that book is called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon and Mary Enig. Flipping through this book, I found it pretty interesting. It's a very good read on some of the sections. And while I don't agree with everything in there, I think it's definitely worth a look. I would even say, for myself, I'll probably consider it a staple on my bookshelf. The link for Nourishing Traditions to Amazon to the book will be in the show notes at fermentationpodcast.com. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, email me at paul@fermentationpodcast.com or go to the website and click the contact button on the top. You can also connect to me on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to fermentationpodcast.com and you should see the links in the sidebar. So to get into the book I'm going to review today, it's called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon and Mary Enig. And it says, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. It looks like on Amazon, let me see, there's about 1,134 reviews, and it's nearly 5 stars. So this book is probably one of the classic books on real homemade type food, say with homesteaders or fermenters. So it looks like the edition that I have is 99/2001. So it's, I think it's still fairly new. It's maybe one of the latest editions. Just to get into the table of contents, to go over maybe everything that this book covers, there's an introduction, mastering the basics, great beginnings, the main course, a catalog of vegetables, luncheon and supper foods, grains and legumes, snack and finger foods, desserts, beverages, feeding babies, and tonics and superfoods. It covers quite a few different areas. Just to get into maybe the introduction, it starts to talk about different diseases that we've had in our population, maybe some of the reasons for that, how much money we're spending on medical care. And I know medical care has been quite a hot topic lately with Obamacare and just the skyrocketing price of covering yourself and your family. In the beginning here, they talk about the diet dictocrats, like I was saying before, which are the different medical associations like American Medical Association, Cancer Society, Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, and Department of Agriculture. They're just trying to make a case where, say, the normal food pyramid that you think of, which would be based on grains and goes up from there, just talking about how grain should be the basis of our diet, which I think in world history, grains have been, or actually more specifically starches, have been the base of human nutrition, just to give you the energy. Or say you want to build a massive population or a massive community, you actually need storable grains. But I think what's happened to those grains nowadays, like wheat, corn, soy, I guess soy wouldn't be a grain, but all the different types of grains that we have nowadays, they've almost been kind of bastardized. So say, take wheat, for instance. It was actually a lot smaller than it used to be, the seed heads. There used to be a lot less gluten. So I think on that one, selective breeding and things have made it such a high gluten content that I don't think it's even necessarily healthy anymore compared to what they used to be. And then later on, at least from what I've seen, if you actually ferment grains, they become more digestible. And not only just the grains themselves, just what we're putting on the grains. So when we're growing, say, a field of wheat, I'm sure they're spraying massive amounts of chemicals and pesticides and herbicides. And you can only imagine when a plant takes that up in its body, it can't be good for human nutrition. So anyway, they're trying to make a case for going against what the conventional wisdom is nowadays. And in the next section, they go over a bunch of different fats, the history of fats, different studies, the types of fats. So say saturated, monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, which I think is really important to understand. Saturated being more solid fats, monounsaturated being more of what you would think of olive oil. Polyunsaturated is highly unstable. That would be more corn oil and vegetable oil, and things like I don't think you should be even ingesting. And then just what constitutes a fat. So metabolically anyway, the fatty acids, they're short chain, medium chain, and long chain. They go in and explain that. And then the different nutritional qualities they have and maybe the health roles that they play. After that, they talk about in fats, what people have actually done to fats, how do they extract them, hydrogenation, which if you've seen any package that says partially hydrogenated, just put it back on the shelf. On from there, they talk about the different places you can get fats from. So say animal fats, duck and goose, chicken, lard, things like that. And then moving on to vegetable fats. So say olives from trees or peanuts, sesame, safflower, sunflower, canola, flaxseed. And then the tropical oils being more like coconuts and palm oil. Around in the next area, they talk about carbohydrates. So the starch and sugar, what it does, the different scientific evidence, where you should be consuming it, where you maybe shouldn't be consuming it. And then moving on to proteins, milk products, maybe why we should or shouldn't be drinking milk products, all the different types of vitamins, minerals, and what they actually do for your body, where you get them. If you're going to be cooking something, the different methods that you can cook them at, so steaming, boiling, how do you actually keep those minerals intact? And then there's just a little bit on enzymes, salt, spices, additives, beverages, and on from there. That was all in the introduction. So it's actually a pretty interesting section. If you end up getting the book, say buying the book or getting it from your local library, it's definitely worth a read over. While I don't agree with everything that they're trying to convince you of, I think it's still good to have in your common knowledge just to see what the arguments are. Make up your own mind for yourself. On from there, there's a guide to food selection, which looks pretty interesting. For me, I actually don't eat any meat, but if you're going to eat meat, I would say these guidelines are pretty good to follow, where they're talking about proteins. Say if you're going to have some kind of beef or lamb or game or chicken or anything like that, should be fresh pasture raised. I don't know if you can consider meat fresh, but in terms of factory farming, and if you're going to have meat pasture raised or any animal that's actually been treated right, but was able to live out a full life and actually have a quality of life, so they're not standing in their own crap all day. Some of the other guidelines they're talking about in fats would be fresh butter, cream from pasture-fed cows. They go on from their dairy, carbohydrates, beverages, and those are the ones that they're recommending. Then they have another section for compromise and then newfangled foods that they're calling it. And that's more on what you shouldn't be eating. A whole section on equipment. If you're going to want to be homesteading or making some of this natural homemade food, you're probably going to want to look into some of these equipment tips that they give. Now onto one of the main sections, mastering the basics. They start off with cultured dairy products. So like I said, being vegan, I'm not going to be eating these things, but it's really great knowledge to know though, because in human history, people have actually survived on dairy products. And if you're going to be homesteading and following a more natural type of diet, not necessarily vegan, but if you want to make your own butter, make your own milk, or make your own cheese from scratch, there's a lot of great recipes in here for that. So just some of them I see right here would be cultured butter, buttermilk, creme fraiche, which is like a European-style sour cream, how to make yogurt, buttermilk, kefir or kefir, whichever one you call it, whey and cream cheese. So if you're going to be making cheese and you need whey for any kind of pickling or fermentation, or you just like to drink whey, they show you how to do that in here. So there's actually quite a few things in here. The next section would be fermented vegetables and fruits, which is probably what I would be more looking at, starting right off with sauerkraut. 1, 2, 3, 4 different types of sauerkraut, just to start off with. Ginger carrots, pickled garlic, which I've done, and they actually taste very good. Although when you're pickling garlic, wow, you would not believe the powerful smell that it gives off when you're standing by it after maybe like a couple days. Pickled cucumbers, which I had just gone over in the last podcast, pickled beets, radishes, pickled peppers, pickled ginger. Actually, I wouldn't mind doing a future podcast or maybe a future recipe on pickled ginger. I think that might be pretty interesting because I'm always using ginger in every recipe. Just about every recipe that I do, I like to do a lot of ethnic cooking and Indian and things like that, and it requires a lot of ginger. There's a fermented bean paste, salsa, on and on from there. Mustard, ketchup, and then several different types of chutneys. And chutney, it really adds a dimension to a recipe that you wouldn't believe. You go to an Indian restaurant, if you've been to one, onion chutney or mango chutney, and take a bite, say, scoop up some rice, scoop up some beans, and put a little chutney on a piece of naan. Oh, so good. From there, they talk about fermenting different fruits like preserving lemons, orange marmalade, berry preserves, and on from there. I mean, the amount of recipes in here are actually pretty surprising, and I think worth a look. After the fermented fruits and vegetables, they go over sprouted grains, nuts, and seeds, which is pretty interesting also. Say if you've never had any kind of sprouted grains or sprouted seeds, you should actually try it. I remember sprouting sunflower seeds, and I was not sure what to expect. You leave the sunflower seeds soaking overnight. You keep rinsing them off, changing, rinsing them off, changing the water. And finally, this little tail comes out, and you eat it, and it actually tastes slightly different than a regular sunflower seed that you would eat. Same thing with mung beans and many different other ones that you can sprout. So they go over several different grains, like wheat, barley, buckwheat, different beans like mung and azuki, which I've had in several Indian dishes. They're very good. Almonds, lentils, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, on and on and on. From there, if you want to make a stock, so say you want to always have a great soup for the wintertime, they have a whole section on stocks, making fish stock, shrimp stock from all types of seafood, beef stock, chicken stock. So if you're on a farm and you really want to make these different stocks, there's a lot of recipes in here to do that. The next section would be salad dressings. If you're growing a garden, you go outside, pick a bunch of leaves, you know, it's kind of boring. You want to spice it up a little bit. Say you make a garlic dressing or an herb dressing, or they even have creamy different dressings in here. Sun-dried tomato, walnut, blue cheese, all kinds of different salad dressings. Different sauces in here and condiments. You would actually be surprised at how many different condiments are naturally fermented. Say you want to make a big jar of mayonnaise rather than going out and buying the crap Miracle Whip. They even have vegan mayos, which are not too bad either. So say you're on a farm and you have chickens and cows and all that, and you want to make mayonnaise. All it takes is eggs, lemon juice, Dijon mustard, whey, and a few other things. There's several different types of mayonnaises in here. It looks like herb, spice, creole, curried, tartar sauce. It just goes on and on and on. Different sauces, pesto sauce, which I actually have quite a bit of basil growing right now. I think I have maybe 8 different basil plants. It's just amazing how well basil grows in Florida. I remember we had gotten one plant from about an hour south of us. Bought it for about $5. It was just an organic basil plant. And that thing has produced so many seeds. I think the one plant will never have to buy seeds again. We'll have basil forever. On the different sauces, there's a lot of them that look really good. Red pepper sauce, peanut sauce, teriyaki, barbecue, curry sauce. So on and on and on the sauces. They show you how to make different butter sauces, herb butter, red pepper butter, papaya pepper, then on to coconut milk, and then a little section all about coconut products like coconut oil, cream coconut, canned coconut, desiccated coconut meat. And if you don't have coconut in your diet, I would suggest you find some recipes and throw it in there. Just the other day, we were making French toast, and normally I make that from a cashew milk. So we blend up cashews with water, and it makes this silky, creamy milk, but we were actually out of cashews. So we were looking around and we had forgotten we had just made something else with coconut milk, had a half a can of coconut, started the recipe with coconut milk and then a little bit more of like a non-dairy type of milk, mixed it together. And with the coconut being full fat, we made this French toast that was just unbelievable. One of the best we've had. So on from there, great beginnings. It looks like hors d'oeuvres and dips. Quite a few recipes in there. Eggplant relish, pastries, all kinds of different dips. Cheese, hummus. Next session, they talk about vegetable salads. All kinds of different salads that you can put together. All the different flavors. Fennel salad, radicchio, endive. And a lot of things that you can grow yourself, depending on what area of the country that you're in. Indian salad, rainbow salad. Quite a few of them here. Pretty surprising. And I'm sure a lot of them are very good. Russian beet salad. I just had a juice this morning with beet in it, and it turns it bright red. Such a beautiful smoothie. And then in the next section, it looks like in the wintertime, when your garden's put to sleep, you can go and make a great soup. And some of these I wouldn't be making personally, but if I ate meat, I'm sure this would actually sound very good with chicken rice soup, a liver dumpling soup. I actually do remember growing up and my grandma up in Cuba, Missouri, she actually made these drop dumplings that were just out of this world. I've tried to make them since and I just can't seem to perfect the recipe. And she's long since passed away. I wish she would have left a recipe to us. It was so good. It was a chicken and dumpling soup that it's been hard to find one like that. I think I've gone to a couple of restaurants and tasted a few dumpling soups and they were close, but just not quite there. But some of the examples they give here, that you can make a French onion soup, miso soup, Mexican Mediterranean fish soup. Quite a different selection of vegetable and meat or seafood type of soups. And vegetables, say you have a lot of winter roots. They have a winter root soup that uses onions, carrots, turnips, rutabaga, parsnip, and then different stocks, and then a whole lot of different spices. I can only imagine that's got to be amazing. A fennel soup. So they have unlimited amount of soups in here. It would take quite a bit of time to even cover all of those, let alone make them all. Say you want a lot of variety in your life, just try one of these every day. The whole next section is on raw meat appetizers, which I'm sure most people would cringe at when you would think, if you go to the store, buy a package of meat, there would be no way that you could bite into something like that, actually raw. I think what they're mostly talking about is, say if you have an animal that is under your care and you're slaughtering yourself, I would think that it hasn't gone through all of the manufacturing processes that make that meat so pestilent ridden and chemical and bacteria and virus ridden. I would think they're probably talking about more something, because when I look at some of these raw beef, corned beef, marinated fish, and I would say fish is probably more likely, you know, something that most people would have an idea of you can eat raw. Say when you go to like a sushi restaurant, most people are expecting that you're going to be eating raw fish. And if you are going to be eating raw fish or sushi or something like that, I think for myself anyway, if I would eat meat, I would probably only stick to saltwater fish, because when you go into the freshwater fish, I think you have more likely of getting parasites and things like that. And I'm sure most people just wouldn't want to even deal with that, especially if you're a home cook and you're making this stuff yourself. And like I said before, I wouldn't be eating this stuff, but if you're going to, I would definitely take some precautions on some of that stuff. Then on to gourmet appetizers, meat mousses, some really interesting looking things like a breaded brain appetizer. For me, that wouldn't sound very appetizing, but it's in there if you want to look it over. And actually, in some parts of the world, I'm sure this stuff is just delicacies, but I think in the U.S., it probably wouldn't go over very well. Now, the next section is onto the main course. So the main course, it looks like it's divided up into different types of main courses. The first one is on fish, and they have breaded, grilled, different types of fish like whitefish, swordfish, trout, fish cakes, and just several other different recipes like different casseroles, sauces that you can make. So if you're near a lake or near a river and you'd like to do a lot of fishing, there's a lot of great recipes in here for you. Next section is on poultry. So different types of recipes for chicken, spiced chicken breasts, buffalo wings, just like in the fish section, just on and on with lots of different recipes, different stews. Say for Thanksgiving, there's turkey with chestnut stuffing, Indian ways of making turkeys and chickens. Next section is on organ meats. I would say if you're going to kill an animal and use their body for nutrients, you have to be willing to use all of the animal. I think that's only appropriate. If the animal's going to die, why would you only take a part of it and leave most of it just to waste or rot or compost? I mean, that animal grew up with a life. It actually lived its life with a purpose. And for that animal's life to actually mean something, I would think, just like in native cultures, just to be able to use the entire animal, I think is more appropriate than just say, like in, what was that movie, Dances with Wolves. When you see that scene where the white men had come, killed all the buffalo, and they had just taken their hides. I think that's more of like the idea with this. So anyways, they go in and talk about all the different things that you can do with organ meats, whether it's sauces or say if you're using kidneys or sweetbreads or different things like that, livers, just how to prepare different things like that. And if you're up in more of the north, say you have a forest next to you, there's a whole section on game. So venison and deer and wild duck, things like that. So if you're a hunter, like some people I know, there's quite a few recipes in there for that. Then there's an entire section on beef and lamb, which most people are a little more familiar with. There's a beef stew with chilies, just all kinds of things. Leg of lamb, rack of lamb, riblets. This is definitely a book that would be more suited to a homesteader, like I was saying. There's a whole section on grinding meat, so say if you're making spaghetti or a meatloaf or any kind of a meatball, this would be the section to show you how to do that. After that is a whole catalog of vegetables. And I'm sure this has got to be a gigantic section because there's just an unlimited amount of vegetables out there. Artichokes, asparagus, beans. Looks like it goes in alphabetical order. If you have a garden, like I was saying, and you're growing any of this stuff, there's a whole lot of recipes in here. Cauliflower, chard. Yeah, let me just go to one of these. Jerusalem artichokes. There's a whole section on that. Jerusalem artichokes are what I would consider like a survival food. It's something you plant a Jerusalem artichoke, and it's almost like a potato, but in a way it's like a water chestnut, I guess. You plant these things, and they just grow like crazy. You go to harvest them, and if you don't harvest every single bit of Jerusalem artichoke, you're going to get more next year, and it's going to grow up in a thick patch, which is good if you want more of like a survival-type garden. Then kale, leeks, lima beans. I just had some lima beans growing. Nothing like a fresh lima bean to crunch into when it's still a little bit young. We even steamed a few fresh lima beans. Wow, definitely a lot different than something you would buy in a store. Parsnips, peppers, potatoes, potato pancakes. Now that's an interesting one, which not too long ago, I made something called boxty, which is like a potato type of a pancake, where you make mashed potatoes, and then you add flour to it and onions and things like that. And oh my God, I think the next time I make mashed potatoes, it almost seems like there's no way I could even just eat the mashed potatoes. It would be a waste not to make potato pancakes or boxty with that. Then on from there, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, yellow squash. When I say turnips or yellow squash or under there, there's, you know, quite a few recipes under each different type of vegetable. So if you look at this book, it's about a couple inches wide and you can hear how heavy this thing is. You could definitely use it as a doorstop. It's pretty large. So just for the amount of recipes in here alone, I would think it's definitely worth buying. On from there is meat salads, a bunch of different types of those. South of the border, it looks like they have a Mexican section in here on tostadas, enchiladas, tacos, quesadillas, chilies, empanadas. So there's a little south of the border section. Another section would be eggs, frying an egg, scrambling an egg, deviled eggs, omelets. On from there, lots of different types of eggs, quiches, suggestion for sandwiches. Next would be grains and legumes. So say if you're making grains and you want to make a porridge, there's quite a few recipes in there for that. or oatmeals or anything like that. They even have a recipe called fried mush. Quite a few different porridges in there. And it looks like probably a lot of these could even be fermented. So that's always an interesting thing to keep in mind. They have a whole section here on bread and flour products and baking with alternative grains. So say you don't want to just bake with wheat or any of the grains you would normally think of, like oats. Say you want to use spelt or kamut or any of one of the more ancient grains, even say quinoa or millet or things like that. They have a whole section in here on how to make waffles or crepes or Yorkshire pudding, banana bread, muffins, yogurt dough, buttermilk biscuits. A whole section in here on what to do with grains if you don't know what to do with them. And another recipe that I'll probably be making up in the coming future, because I love sourdough bread. I'll try to make a sourdough starter, but there's a couple recipes in here for a sourdough starter and then a sourdough bread. Then on to the next section would be legumes. So beans, making refried beans, mashed beans, baked beans, several different bean recipes, Jamaican style, French style, how to make a porridge out of beans. Making basic chickpeas, which if you've never made fresh chickpeas compared to like a store-bought chickpea, it is completely different. You have to get out the pressure cooker if you're going to be doing this. I guess you could be doing it the old-fashioned way, where you make it in on a stovetop, but it just takes forever. A pressure cooker only takes maybe like 30 minutes or so after you've soaked them. You can even do like a quick soak. Back to the legumes, there's how to make falafels, lentils, dumplings, Indian style dumplings. The next section is snack and finger foods, and there's all kinds of nuts that you can put together and maybe coat with like some kind of a sugar coating or sea salt, anything like that. Popcorn, pita chips, tortilla chips, pizza, and on from there. Fudge, even some sweet things even in there. Peanut cookies, ginger snaps. And that was actually only the snacks and finger foods. Now we've actually gotten to the desserts. So in the dessert section, they have a whole section in here talking about the different sweeteners, several different sweeteners. Raw honey, maple syrup, stevia, date sugar, molasses, malted grain syrup, sorghum. And then some of the other syrups in there, or the other sweeteners in there that I don't consider even food. If it's on a package, I just put it right back. And that would be fructose, high fructose corn syrup. The next little area in here talks about, under the dessert section, it talks about making compotes or fried bananas. There's several recipes in there. It looks like they bring a lot of fruits in here. Making baked apples, apple cobbler. Some of these, you know, I just look at it and mouth starts watering. I would just love to make some of this stuff. Macadamia nut pudding. And all throughout this book, they have on the side here different little tips and tricks. They even have little things on the side that says know your ingredients, and they name off or they list off a whole list of ingredients. So say this one would be skim milk, water, sugar, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, modified food starch, salt, sodium stearate, lactylate, artificial flavor. And they're telling you this is a package and to guess what that is. And then toward the back, they give you the answer. When you see an ingredient list and there's just a gigantic amount of things that you can't even pronounce or don't even know what they are, you should probably just put it back on the shelf. So say you want to get into more of the desserts here. There's carob brownies, carob being more of like a chocolate type of a substitute. Gingerbread, almond bars. There's different sauces. So say you want to make an ice cream. There's a recipe in here for ice cream. Raspberry sauce, sherbet, a butter mousse, tropical delight. There's a section on pies and cakes. So when I think of pies or cakes, probably more specifically pies, I always have that picture in my mind of my grandma. And some of the things that she used to make would be, at least from what my mom would talk about, they would have an apple tree and my grandpa would back the truck up to the apple tree and then they would just load the whole back of the truck up with all these apples. He'd bring them to the house and then supposedly every Tuesday was like an apple pie day where people from all around would come to try some of my grandma's apple pies. I wish I had lived up there at the time just to see what that whole life was like, but I'm sure romanticizing that you want to romanticize something like that, but I'm sure it was actually a hard life too. Even though back then, you know, there was no TV, no cell phones, no Facebook, no podcasts even. But it must have been much more of a simple life with natural ingredients, things that you would actually want to eat and actually crave and actually have your body crave rather than your body being tricked by all these artificial ingredients. It seems almost kind of crazy nowadays. I mean, if you want to eat healthy, you really have to put it on yourself to do that because the government or companies or corporations, they're just not going to do it for you. You're going to have to do it yourself. So getting back to some of these desserts, there's apple tarts and cream cheese frosting, buttercream icing, almond cake, rice cake, all kinds of shortcake. There's gourmet desserts, puddings, souffles. It's the amount of recipes in here is really, really amazing. Now onto a section that I think I would find pretty interesting, just for the recipes alone, would be the different beverages that you can make. And some of the things in here, say like ginger ale or apple cider, that would be something that I would love to try some of these things. I've actually made a ginger ale before, ginger beer, whichever one you want to call it. I've made it a while ago, and every time you pop that bottle open and all the bubbles start coming out, it makes you feel good knowing that you did that. Apple cider, I've made a little mason jar of that, and I have to say, it does turn out very good. So if you want to try any kind of drinks in here, there's plenty of recipes to try. There's even like an old-fashioned root beer recipe using sassafras and different ingredients like that. One thing I made not too long ago, maybe a year or so ago, was in here they're calling it sweet potato soda, but I know it more as sweet potato fly. It's actually a beverage, more of like a soda made from sweet potatoes. It has this interesting sweet taste to it. You also add things like more of the Christmas ingredients like nutmeg or mace or cloves. And when you make that around Christmas time, it's definitely a pretty cool drink that goes over very well. Some other things in here would be almond milk, different teas like ginger tea, kvasses. So if you want to make more of like a beet kvass, even kombuchas in here, which is kind of surprising. The whole next section is on feeding babies. They talk about what your diet should be for pregnant women, maybe when a baby is just born, when they're younger. And there's several different formulas in here to actually make your own baby food. There's even a whole page on tips for successful breastfeeding, which I highly recommend everybody that can, they should. Next section is on tonics and superfood. So different types of broth. If you want lots of vitamins and minerals, just make a broth, drink that up, or make almost like a soup out of it. There's a vegetable juice cocktail, raw tonic. It looks like some of these are even more of like a home remedies. So barley water, which that actually almost sounds like a Rejuvelac. Oh, and I turn the page, next page. There's actually a recipe for Rejuvelac, where you actually take wheat berries or different grain berries, sprout them, and make like a fizzy, almost lemony type drink out of it, which is pretty interesting. The next section, they talk all about superfoods. So say, let's see what some of these are. Azomite, which I was kind of surprised to see this in here. Azomite mineral powder. Normally, you actually put this in your garden to replace all the different minerals that you might be missing. Bee pollen, different algaes and spirulina. Cod liver oil, which I've heard is somewhat of like a cold remedy. Haven't ever had a chance to try that out, but I see a lot of people talking about it. Kelp, which is more of like a sea vegetable, like a seaweed, which probably has a lot of different things like iodine, different probiotics, and then nutritional yeast, which is like a kind of like a dead type of yeast, but if you put it on things, it's actually a good replacement for cheeses, like a almost like a Parmesan type of a flavor. It's hard to describe that, but that's another one in there. And then they have several massive indexes. So if you want to know where to actually get something, so say, let me see here, you need arrowroot powder. There's a place that you can go for that. Different butters, coconut oil. If you need to order coconut oil, they recommend different places to go for that. There's an entire section on resources for that. And then a suggested reading section. So this book being pretty massive. I know I didn't even go over some of the ferments in there, but in the fruits and vegetables in that whole section, there's several different fermenting techniques in there. And like I was saying with the beverages, there's quite a few different, say like ginger beer, Rejuvelac, quite a different nourishing fermented beverages in there. So no matter what kind of diet that you follow, say for me, since I'm vegan, I don't have dairy products or meat products, there's still quite a few recipes in here, quite a few that are definitely worth it. Say you're a homesteader and you want to use your farm to its potential, it's definitely worth a look to check out some of these recipes. Or say you just want to go against the grain of what the medical associations are telling you. You want to find some kind of an alternative way to heal yourself or to nourish yourself. I think nourishing traditions is definitely worth a look. And while it won't be necessarily my go-to book, it will definitely be up there. I'll be flipping through this book to check out quite a few of these recipes. And I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes to Nourishing Traditions on Amazon. And I invite you guys to come out to fermentationpodcast.com and leave me some comments on today's show. Let me know what you think. Also, don't forget to subscribe to get updates to new shows and blog posts by email. So this has been Paul Bates encouraging you to change your life, ferment responsibly, and get out there and create some culture.